Welcome to AMP, the platform for age group multi-sport athletes to showcase their journeys. Welcome along to episode 50. Yes, we've reached the big 5-0. I'm so delighted that we're still here after 50 episodes. Not in my wildest dreams did I ever think that we would still be doing this. And it's just been a fantastic journey for me creating this and also meeting all these fantastic age group athletes. Long may it continue, and thank you for all your support. So 50, the big 5-0, and on this episode we've got Fiona Carter. And isn't it weird how these things pan out? There was a race on at Alton Park a few weeks ago that I took part in, and one of our previous guests, Karina Kaufman, was there, and she got talking to Fiona. I'm not sure whether it was before Fiona's race or after the race, and they got talking, and Fiona was telling her a little about herself and about the charity that she set up. So Karina, in her wisdom, said, "We'll get in touch with Richard at Age Group Multisport Podcast and get on there, and he'll give you a little bit of support, and you can tell your story and you can tell him a little bit about the charity that you've set up." So that's what she did, and so coming up is a great chat about Fiona's own story and a journey into multisport and age group, and then she goes on to tell us about the charity that she set up, supporting young athletes in the Cotswolds. Really enjoyed that. And then on top of that, Jamie Price got in touch. He was a guest probably in the first year that we did this. A young guy, not long out of university. Really good triathlete. He's on the cusp of like quite big things. But such a nice chap. And I said to him at the time that if there's anything I could help him with, then get back in touch and I will do. Well, Jamie landed a job at a cycling and running clothes manufacturer called Presca, and basically they're a sustainable brand, and Jamie got in touch and asked would I be interested in helping promoting them. And to be fair, I don't do that on this podcast. It's not something that I've really bothered about, because I just do this for the love of it. Don't look for any funding or anything else. I just really do it for the sheer hell of doing it. But I said that if I could help him in any way, then I would do. But before we went any further, obviously, if I'm going to put the Age Group Multisport name to it, then we need to have a look at the gear and see what it's all about. So he committed to sending some cycling gear in, which I received, and to be fair, I usually wear Rafa, and this stuff is as good as the Rafa stuff. I was really impressed with it. So, that being said, I've just sent a message to Jamie and said I'd be quite glad, because the quality is there of the cycling gear, to help them in any way I can. So on one hand, I'm going to help Jamie out in his job, and help promote it. And on the other hand, it's a worthwhile brand. The sustainability element behind it is something that we all have to think about and going forward look at. But you can go on the Presca website and read all about how they are sustainable. But all I can say is that the quality of the clothing is pretty good. With that in mind, Jamie said, "Well, what can we do for you?" And I said, "Well, to be honest, I don't really need anything or want anything." I said, "I'm quite happy to, now I've seen the quality of the stuff, to give you a shout out or whatever you need to promote the brand." I said, "But what you could do is get in touch with Fiona's charity, Cass and Friends, and see what you could do for them." So that's all happening at the moment as we speak. And we'll see where it takes us. So that's quite exciting to, you know, to get all that going, and hopefully that Fiona's charity can benefit from that, and we can help Presca and Jamie at the same time. So that was really good. Over the last few days, I've started to feel a bit normal again, which is, well, as normal as I can do, which is great. I've actually been back on the turbo a couple of times, and I am planning going out on a run today, actually, hopefully. The pain's really, really calmed down, and yeah, still a little bit there, but nowhere near as bad as it was. So hopefully, fingers crossed, we'll get back onto it and get back into training, which will be fabulous. Really, really missed it. I'm about a third of the way through The Lost Art of Running book by Shane Benzie. And yeah, really, really interesting. He's been all over the place, running with all sorts of different people. Really good book. Food for thought. He's trying to get us to go back to how we probably did run centuries ago by pretty much looking how we run now. And he started off over in Africa and looked at the way they ran. And each place he's been around, like, has given him food for thought. So yeah, it's really, really interesting. So if you get a chance to get hold of a copy, The Lost Art of Running by Shane Benzie. I guess it's one of those things, like he says, that we don't analyse the way we run, we just run. We get bike fits to make sure that we're as aerodynamic on the bike and it fits as well and it's comfortable. We get our swim analysed to see where the stroke is and how we're doing technically. But other than for getting your shoes fit, new trainers maybe, when's the last time you ever got videoed running? I can't remember. I've done it myself a few times to see what I've like, but not for any other reason. It's just to see what I look like. And obviously when I've had new trainers, I've been on the treadmill and they've took a biomechanical review of how my foot strikes the treadmill to see whether I pronate or supinate. But other than that, it's not for any other reason. So this, it's food for thought to see, actually, we should be doing the same thing technically with our run as we do with our swim and our bike. So a really good book, can't recommend it enough. What else have we been doing? Been watching, watched the Super League indoors. That was on in London, that was good last Saturday. Quite an interesting result. I'll not put any spoilers on just in case you haven't watched it, but worth a watch. Fantastic format, genius. Been listening to a few interesting podcasts over the last few weeks, and quite a lot of them are now talking about long COVID and how we should get back to training after COVID. And the Oxygen Addict had a really interesting guest on, Dr. Rebecca Robinson. And they were just talking about the long COVID clinic that she runs down in London, which helps patients get back to exercise more quickly. So yeah, that was interesting. There was some side effects there that I didn't even realise were part of COVID. So that was a good listen. Another one I was listening to, well, it's in a series of three, was the Triathlon podcast, and they did three episodes talking about preventing and treating triathlon injuries. And each episode they've looked at different areas of the body, so that's a good listen as well. Yeah, watched a really interesting series as well on BBC iPlayer, and it was Fiona who actually put me onto this, and it was all about ice skating. Well, Mrs. C loves ice skating, so I thought I was onto a winner then by watching it. But it was about following a group of skaters that were trying to qualify, firstly to get to the British Championships, and then it was to see who was going to come out on top at the British Championships. And it was, there was two series, I think, and there were only about four episodes in each, but it's quite incredible how these skaters, athletes, what they put their bodies through, and yeah, it was a really, really good documentary. So that's worth a watch. That's on BBC iPlayer. And then the last one, a Netflix documentary about the Italian swimmer Federica Pellegrini. It's subtitled, but it's really, really cool. It goes back from when she started swimming as a youngster to her final race, and everything in between. Really, really good watch if you can get past the subtitles. So yeah, so those have been a few of the things that I've been watching and reading and listening to this past fortnight. Right, on to the main event. And it's my pleasure to introduce Fiona Carter. And I'll see you on the other side.
Hi.
Hello, hi.
How are you?
I'm all right, thank you. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Well, almost.
So, yeah, you had a little crash then at Alton Park, did you?
I did, yeah.
How are you doing now?
A week and a half in, yeah, getting more of ribs, front and back, bruised and battered, but yeah, painful.
Really painful. So did you hit one of the cones on one of the on that top bend?
Yeah. I was just coming round, and I just jumped on the back of a group, and I didn't see the cone. He'd moved out in front of me, and I didn't see it and hit it and went down.
Oh no, nightmare.
Yeah.
Not good. It's not good when you've gone all that way. I mean, was it far for you to go? I don't know. Where are you based?
We're over in Lincolnshire.
Okay. So a little way to go.
Yeah, about 150 miles.
Yeah.
Not as far as some, but still
far. No. Yeah. Far enough to come home without getting to do that fantastic second run.
Yeah. Were you racing yourself?
I did. I raced at Alton Park as well, but I did the middle distance race.
Right. Okay. And how did you get on?
I won it, actually.
Oh, fab. Well done.
Yeah. So that was all right, wasn't it? For an old bird.
Yeah. Well, we're all getting that way, aren't we? But it doesn't stop us.
No, exactly. It doesn't stop us. It's good.
So thank you ever so much for, just reaching out, really, and agreeing to come on. And we've got a bit of a two-pronged sword here, haven't we, that you want to talk about?
So, yeah.
Firstly and foremost, if you can just introduce yourself to the listeners and give us a little bit about your background growing up.
Yeah, well, my name is Fiona Carter, and my background in sport or multi-sport, I guess, started at school because I did do something called tetrathlon. So not triathlon, it had the horse riding bit in it as well. So it was swimming and shooting and horse riding and the running afterwards. So you just did a pistol shooting thing from 10 metres. And you swam in a pool, and the horse riding was over cross-country jumps, and then you ran around the cross-country course afterwards. So it was done over 2 days. So that was good fun.
Yeah.
And at school, I did all sort of like netball and hockey and athletics and stuff like that. But then I stopped. I didn't really do any sport at uni. I went to Bath Uni and didn't do anything, which was a complete waste of time because, as most people will know, that Bath is full of amazing sports facilities now. I mean, obviously 30 years ago, it wasn't quite the same then, but it was probably a bit of a waste of time. So I got back into running when the kids were tiny and I was dropping them off at a nursery and having like a couple of hours to spend and sort of fill my time. So I just went to a local gym and got on the treadmill and ran on the treadmill for like an hour and a bit because that was what I thought I should do with the time. And somebody just one day came up to me and said, do you fancy doing a 10K, the Cheltenham 10K race? So I said, well, why not? I'll give it a go. And so I did that. And so that was kind of like my first little race for running. I'd never done a race before. Mm. And then my husband was doing some cycling. He was cycling over the Pyrenees with a group of friends and training madly for that. And he then got asked to do another bike ride from Paris to London. So I said to him, maybe I could come as well. So I got a road bike and clip and shoes, and that was all new. And that was about 2010. So
right.
I had done some mountain biking when I was younger. And, you know, as a teenager, I'd done mountain biking, but I'd never ridden a road bike. So 2010 was kind of like my first bit of cycling. And I used to get up really early in the morning and train in the cellar where we had like a sit and bike, and the kids were little, they were only 5 and 6, so they were in bed still. My husband was working away from home, so I couldn't go out anywhere. I had to stay in the house. And so we cycled from Paris to London. That was really good.
Yeah.
And then a friend of mine was doing modern pentathlon for age group stuff.
Right.
So he said, oh, Fee, why don't you give it a go for duathlon? You know, you like your running and cycling, give it a go. So he was the person who inspired me to have a go.
Had you heard of duathlon before that?
I think I probably had, but I just had never considered that I would be able to do it.
Yeah, because triathlon was big, wasn't it? But duathlon, not so much.
Yeah, true. I mean, this was probably now, we're talking 2015, so it's not that many years ago.
Right.
So I then started Googling times and what you had to do and what you had to, race you had to enter and all that sort of stuff. So I found a race that I could enter, which was in January. It was in, I think it was called Grafham Water over in Cambridgeshire.
Yeah, I've heard of it.
I think that was the very first duathlon I ever did. It was so windy. It was really windy. I had no, you know, the kit I had wasn't, you know, it was just like a normal road bike and stuff. And I had a helmet that didn't look particularly aerodynamic. So I bought a cover to go over it.
Mm.
And it was that windy that the cover on the helmet blew off. I mean, it was crazy, absolutely mad. But it was good fun. And I qualified then for going to Spain, to Soria, to do the European Championships.
Qualified your first race?
Yeah, it was mad. It was really
natural.
Well, I don't know. I just enjoyed it, loved it. And just, so that was great. So I went off to Spain and that was really fun, meeting all these amazing people and having that experience of being in the sort of team hotel and just, you know, just even just sort of like the opening ceremony and the sort of pasta party and sort of my kids were carrying a flag and I think one of them was carrying the Romanian flag. So there weren't enough kids. It was just like really fun.
Yeah.
And so that was just a really lovely experience. And so then I thought, I tried this again, but I quite fancied going a bit longer. So somebody had said that Zofingen was good. So then I was like, well, I need to qualify for Zofingen, so I need to do some longer races. So I did a really, really brilliant race in Wales called the Little Pig. Okay. I don't know whether you've heard of it. It's organised by an amazing lady called Claire Smith, who's known as Brutal Claire. Her events are called Brutal Events, and the Little Pig is the easiest of all her events. So the Little Pig was, I think it was a 5 or 10 mile run around the lake at the bottom of Snowdon. And then you did maybe, I can't remember exactly, but it was about a 90 mile bike ride. So it wasn't a short bike ride. And then the final run was running up and down Snowdon.
Right.
So that was really, really good. Really hard, but really good.
Mm.
So that was a long distance one. Then I did one called Storm of Fort, which is part Storm of Castle and Storm of Fort. That was good. That was another longer distance one. And I did the London Duathlon. That was the side I chose the long course of the London Duathlon. That was nice and fun and just safe being around the park.
Mm.
And then I did Zofingen, which was amazing.
Mm.
That was quite, that's the harder, longer one, isn't it? But it was, again, just really fabulous experience. Zofingen is such a nice, pretty little town in Switzerland. So I stayed for like 4 nights and that was really nice, again, meeting everybody. And my husband came out. My kids didn't come out to that one, but they did come out to Spain. My husband came with me to Switzerland. And then I don't know, last time I did a duathlon was 2019, I think, just before the whole lockdown thing. So that was a longer course at Hever Castle. And so I was really lucky that race was then able to qualify me for V-Borg this year, even though it was 2 years ago.
Yeah. Was that the full distance, or was it a half distance?
It was kind of like half distance. It was a bit longer than the middle distance, I think.
Right.
I think it might have been a 10K, maybe. Anyway, it was just a bit longer than the middle distance, I think.
Yeah, cool.
So that was good. And then, so that means I can go to V-Borg in May. Or
that's May, is it? This year?
Yeah, this year. That's May 7th. So that's exciting.
So that's really good. So are you in a club or are you coached or how do you get on with your
training? Yeah, do you know, I've never been coached before up until this January. So this is kind of links to the charity a bit. But I was working with one of the young athletes who's actually did his first professional triathlon aged 18 last year. And I worked with him on the mindset course, and he applied to be part of the charity, but he was almost 18 when he applied, and we only support athletes to the age of 18. So I said, well, we can't really support you with too much funding, but we can do the 8-week mindset course. So together we did the mindset course, and it was really good and got on well. And then he, instead of going off to uni, because he's, you know, intending to sort of carry on with his triathlon career, he got a job as an apprentice, you know, doing a degree apprenticeship. And he's just set up a small coaching business with his dad, who's a sports physiologist and does all the lactate testing and stuff.
Right.
So I said to him, I said, I don't know whether you'll want to do this, but if you want a guinea pig, I will be your guinea pig. So it was a bit of a double-edged sword. I was like, on one hand, I was thinking, oh, yes, please say yes, because that would be great to be coached. And then on the other hand, I was thinking, I've done this. Like, I'm a bit of a control freak, and I've done it myself, and I kind of have my little routine. And so I didn't know how that would go. But since January, I have been coached, and I've thoroughly enjoyed it. And he's set me sessions that I would never have set myself, and I would never have pushed myself so hard. I think I'd kind of got myself into a bit of a comfort zone of just jumping on my treadmill for intervals and doing them at a pace that I knew I could do. Whereas he's now got me doing my run sessions outside, and I'm having to upload them onto a Garmin, and I'm having to do training peaks and all these technical things that people my age don't really know about. So I even have to write down, because I haven't got a Garmin on, I've got a Watt bike, I'm really lucky to have a Watt bike, but I don't seem to have a Garmin computer that can link to Training Peaks and then onto the Watt bike anyway. So I kind of write it all out, what he's given me to do. so if he changes it, then I sometimes have to rewrite it, but that's fine. But yeah, no, he's done some really awesome sessions. And like even Parkrun, I just would have gone to Parkrun and done Parkrun, but he gets me to do park run and then does little mini interval repeats after a park run. So it's really me do some, you know, faster times, and I am getting quicker. So that's really exciting. So well, yeah.
It's working then, obviously.
It seems to be working. So yeah. Yeah.
And congratulations on like adapting and, you know, cause you've been so successful up to now to take that leap and faith, I suppose, to see if it can, improving it quite clearly. So congratulations on taking that.
Well, it's been, I tell you what, it has been a bit of a learning curve, and it's been quite stressful because I am quite stressed about the sessions that he sets me, and then having to sort of know I've got to report back. And so it has been quite interesting. I've really enjoyed it, I have, but it has been also quite stressful. I'm sort of beginning to get more used to it now. So yeah, but I would recommend, you know, I having now been coached, I think it is a good thing to have a coach, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's that accountability, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I've always been really motivated to do it, but it's that extra level of pushing yourself harder in training to make the racing seem a little bit easier.
Yeah. Maybe. No, well, it's like I say, it seems to be working. So, well done.
We'll stick with him.
So just going back to you, I mean, I've got a set of questions that I want to ask you, but since you've mentioned the charity, just going back to that, just explain to the listeners what it is, how it came about, and basically what it's about.
Okay. Well, it came about partly because of going off to Spain, I think, to race in Spain with your GB kit on and having to pay, you know, quite a lot of money to get there. And to think, gosh, this is really only accessible to a certain number of people. And then my son was really into his hockey. He was playing really well. And he was selected to go to the sort of next pathway. He's sort of got the county level and then the regional level. And then the next level was to go on the England development pathway. But to do that, you needed to buy a whole load of kit. We got sent this list of kit that he needed to buy. And that, you know, to buy the kit was about £500. And I just thought, this is, you know, just for some families, this isn't possible. So that was a very big part of setting it up. It was to help families to get more on a little bit of a level playing field with other more affluent families, so that their children who were really talented at sport, and the kids we support, they're aspiring Olympians. I mean, they really are cracking kids. They're brilliant. And if they start age 12 and we support them to age 18, the 12-year-olds are county level, and then they'll be going regional, then they'll be going national, and then they'll be going international. And for example, I'm working with a lovely girl at the moment who's trying to qualify for the under-18 steeplechase. And if she qualifies, the race is in Israel, but she'll be going on her own. You know, her mum won't be going with her. Mm. And I just, you know, so little stories like that make me really want to help these kids just to, as I say, just so that they can be a little bit more on a level playing field. So we started it because we met a local triathlete, funny enough. So she's Casarina Ferreira. That's why the charity is called Cass and Friends.
I'm not sure where the name came from.
Yeah, so this is back in 2014. So my kids were having some swimming lessons by a swim coach called Richard Good, who's also a triathlon coach. And he was just said, you know, Casarina, I'm working with her. She's absolutely fantastic. She's now with the West Midlands Academy, but her parents can't afford the new bike and the new shoes and the new this and that, because at 14, she's still growing and she's sort of growing out of all her original kit. So we just, so me and a couple of friends in the village, we just set up this little fund, really, and we called it Cass and Friends because we knew we wanted to support more than just her. So that was 2014. And that was when we were just doing, like, I don't know, we did like pub suppers with a bit of a raffle, or we did a fish and chip night and a quiz night. We did a couple of parties where we invited friends, but it got to the stage where we couldn't keep asking all our mates to come to parties to support this charity. So we knew we had to become a charity. So in 2017, we became a charity. And then in 2017, we called it Cass and Friends, but the Cass bit now stands for Cotswolds Athlete Support Scheme. So we kind of kept
it. When I looked at it, I looked at your website, I was trying to work out what the Cass meant. And I got the first two letters, but the second two I didn't quite manage.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Yeah.
And that's because we live here in the Cotswolds, and we wanted them to have a geographical remit. So we support athletes in two counties that are mostly in the Cotswolds, Gloucestershire and Worcestershire.
Sure.
And yeah. So that's how it came about. The athletes are between the age of 12 and 18. They've got to be at a state school unless they're on a massive full bursary, sports scholarship or whatever. And and they've got to be at a certain level. So they've got to be sort of on that pathway, because that's when it becomes so expensive. You know, that's when they're traveling around the country. You know, they're always going all over the country to race. And then they're staying in a Premier Inn or Travelodge or something. And that's £100 a night, isn't it? And the petrol and the costs. And so that's who we support.
Yeah, cool. And it's any sport?
Any sport. We have had, oh my God, we've had, we've got runners, obviously. Runners seem to be the most popular. We've got two boxers, we've had an archer, we've had a fencer, we've had a darts player, we've had a fisherman. So the fisherman went off and got a silver medal at the European Championships, and the darts player's been to the World Championships twice. We've got a triathlete, we have tennis players, cyclists. So all sports. We're just about to, I'm just tonight meeting a girl who's a taekwondo player. So she's come to us through SportsAid. So we've now just joined up with SportsAid. Because funny enough, we were actually having a little bit of difficulty finding more athletes. So we've partnered with SportsAid, and the athletes that they support who are in Gloucestershire and Worcestershire, they are asking us if we can support them and give them all the extra add-ons that we give them. Because typically SportsAid, I think, sort of gives them one-off check for £1,000, right. And then there isn't much of a transaction. That's a kind of transaction, and then they sort of forget about the athletes. Whereas we're really, really different to that. So when an athlete applies, I get the application form in, then I speak to their coach, and then I meet them. And then only at that point would we agree whether or not we can take them on. And then if we do take them on, we put them through the 8-week mindset course if they want to do it. We'll go and watch them at races. We'll send them good luck cards. We'll be communicating with them all the time. They're involved in our closed Facebook group, which is now, we've got a partnership with Fourth Discipline, which again is a triathlon-based nutrition company.
Right.
And Claire Fudge, who's the lady who runs Fourth Discipline, she's our nutritionist. So we do webinars with Claire. And Nikki Bartlett is our ambassador.
Ah, very good.
So Nikki does Q&A sessions with the athletes. And I was talking to one of them on Sunday, and we were both comparing pre-race anxiety and nerves, and I said literally when I racked my bike at Alton Park, I said to myself, what on earth am I doing? I mean, I'm so ridiculously nervous. And I said, why do I do this to myself? And I said this to this little girl, literally 12, and she said, yeah, she gets so nervous. So we're going to do a Q&A about pre-race anxiety and nerves with the athletes. So we can all just talk about, you know, what it is, why we're so nervous and what we do about it and how we feel after the race and remind ourselves why we do put ourselves through it all.
It's a funny one because everybody has that. You can call it nerves, you can call it anxiety, butterflies, however you want to describe it, but we all get it. And I think you need some of that. That's the competitiveness of yourself. And not necessarily against other people, but making sure that you don't let yourself down.
Yes.
I think that's how I look at it and view it.
Yes.
And I guess the higher you go, then that might change. I don't know, because I've not sort of like reached any level, but I'm imagining the more burden on your shoulders to do well by, if you view everybody else around you, the more anxiety you're going to take to that start line, aren't you? So it is a big thing, and it's a great thing to be able to speak to and have a course about that and deal with it, isn't it? Especially from a young age.
Yeah, totally, absolutely. And I think that's what's so lovely about the 8-week mindset course is we cover all of those sorts of things in the course. And the parents of the athletes that we support, they say, you know what, the financial help is really useful and it's lovely, thank you very much. But they say that one-to-one support and the fact that somebody outside of their initial support network is on their side and vouching for them and rooting for them. And I think that's a really big part of what we do. And I think that's what makes the charity really special.
Yeah. Excellent. Really, really cool. It's nice to see something. I've not heard of a charity that does what you're doing, actually. It's quite refreshing to help those that you are helping. And because we know, as you've said it rightly earlier, that it's a really expensive thing and quite a privileged thing that we do for age group, and not everybody can afford to do it and spend that cash. It is a great thing. Well done.
But even those Vaporflies, I mean, I'm sure most of us have got a pair now, haven't we? But they do make a difference, don't they? A time trial bike and a pair of Vapor shoes, it's expensive and it makes a difference. So if we can help these kids get a pair of Vaporflies, or maybe them two little Vaporflies, well, the older ones wouldn't be, but that sort of thing, if we can help them with a bit more equipment or a bit more kit can make them a bit more on a level playing field, that's really nice. Shall I tell you a little bit about the mindset course, what it covers?
Yeah, that'd be great.
I mean, it's 8 weeks, and so we ask the athletes to, so I send them a little booklet with all the sort of worksheets that we go through. I also send them a little chimp in the post because we work through the chimp paradox.
Oh, Steve, I've read the book.
Yeah, Steve Peters. So they get their workbook, they get a little chimp, they get a little tin, which we work with at the end of the course, which they put all their, you know, really positive results, and they call it their confidence booster tin, so they can take that away with them to races and stuff. And it's about an hour's commitment for them during the week. So it's over 8 weeks, 1 hour a week. And then afterwards, after each session, there are some little actions they can take and some videos they can watch, YouTube videos I send them to watch or podcasts to listen to. But we cover stuff like, so the first session is all about introduction and sort of values, because we think it's really important for them to understand what their values are so that we can map those onto their process goals that we do in week two. So that's kind of new for some of the athletes. They sort of don't really know what a value is and what theirs are. So we sort of do a little exercise with them to sort of tease them out. And then in week two, I ask them to think about their outcome goals that they want to work on for the next sort of six months to a year. And so I explain to them the difference between sort of different goals that they can have, and the outcome goals might be a little bit out of their control, but they obviously have to set them because it's really important to have that stretch and that target. And then in the meeting together, we work on their performance goals, which will help them achieve their outcome goals, and all the little habits and behaviours and the process goals that are at the sort of bottom level. Mm. So that's in week two. And then at the end of week two, I explain what the chimp paradox is all about, because we do use that actually quite a lot in the rest of the sessions, because they don't really understand how their brain works, and they don't really understand why they get anxious or nervous, or they don't want to do certain training sessions, or they might not want to eat after after they've done a big training session, even though we know that it's obviously really important they should do that. So the chin paradox is something we do in week two. And then we talk about changing their habits in week three and self-talk. So if they've identified any sort of deep-seated beliefs that they want to change or habits they want to change, we work on those in week three with the self-talk. And I always explain to them that, you know, we talk to ourselves all the time, don't we, all through through the day. And we're the person who's listening to what we say to ourselves. So we have to be careful what we say. And sometimes I don't think we speak to a dear friend in the same way that we speak to ourselves. So I explain how that all works and we do some exercises on that. And then week four is all about sleep and nutrition and recovery. So a big part of it for them because they're juggling all their school. And sometimes I'm coaching athletes who are sort of doing their GCSEs or A-levels. So it's big, big years for them. So it's nice to sort of be able to help them and sort of manage that sort of recovery piece. And most of them know a bit about nutrition, but they don't know some of the basics about sort of fueling before, during and after sessions. And also some of them are just, you know, so busy, as I say, with schoolwork and training, they kind of almost don't have enough time to fit in enough food, especially the young, you know, triathletes who are training in the morning with swimming and then what bike in the evening or track sessions. It's, they are burning a lot of calories and need to refuel as much as possible. So that's week four. Week five is how to manage the anxiety piece that we talked about, controlling the controllables, and we work on mantras. And sometimes I create little tattoos for them with their mantra on so they can put a temporary tattoo on their arm, or I encourage them to write it on their water bottles. Or one athlete I've worked with is a tennis player, and he's got a sticker on his bag because he really likes somebody called LaMelo. I can't remember his, anyway, he's a basketball player, so right. He's got his sticker, his logo, LaMelo balls. He's got his logo on his bag. So just little things like that, little cues and mantras. We work on all of that in week five, and some breathing techniques if they're anxious and things like that. Week six is all about their strengths and boosting their confidence and working on their strengths. It's very easy for us to forget about what we are actually quite good at.
So
I remind them what they're good at, and it's nice to have like that superpower strength, isn't it? That one thing that you know you're really good at. Whether it be running up hills or I don't know. And then week seven, I think week seven is a really good one. And I think it works really well for some of our, you know, the people doing what we do. And so we do an entire week of planning and we call it the pre-race psych plan. So it's what you would do Monday through to Sunday in terms of all the psychology and all the strategies that we've worked on over the past 8 weeks. And we pull them all together in that final week. So they write out their week's plan of how they're going, what videos, motivational videos they might watch. Maybe they're going to listen to some good playlists they've created over the course. They're going to do the breathing techniques and the visualization we've worked on, and they put it all together in that final week before their big race. And then we do a 24-hour plan, so the 24 hours before their race, what are they going to do and how they're going to warm up and all those things, just to make them really, really prepared. And that sort of calms their nerves as well and makes them less anxious if they've done all that preparation, because they've done all the physical training, they know they can trust that process. But most of us don't really think about the mental side of it and the mental fitness that we have to do just as much as the physical fitness.
I mean, we have physical health and we have mental health, don't we? And mental health doesn't mean to say you're ill, it's just that is it is a thing, you know.
Yes. Yeah. And we'd go straight to a physio, wouldn't we, if we had a poorly muscle or stretched or a tear or something. Or we'd go to a coach if we wanted to learn a new skill, but sometimes we don't go to talk about sort of the mental health side of things.
It's not known, is it? It's not a thing. People with mental illness is only now being accepted. So, you know, people who haven't got it and are trying to improve the mental health just because they want to, it's not quite a thing yet, I don't think.
No. And the course is great because all these little strategies, they're all things they can take on into their later life. It doesn't have to necessarily be related to sport.
Yeah.
They can use all these little tips and strategies in at school with friends, or, you know, as adults, we can use them communicating or with other things that are going on in our lives.
Yeah, I think a lot of it does cross over with business, doesn't it? If you go into business.
Yeah.
Sport and business, it's very, very similar, I think.
Yes. Do you listen to the High Performance podcast?
I do, yeah. Yeah.
Because that's quite similar, isn't it? They have lots of sort of, they have businessy people and sporty people who are, and often talking about mindset and strategies and how to, yeah, being, yeah.
There's another one called Purple Patch Fitness.
I like that.
And he does both. He does sport. He's basically a triathlete coach over in LA, originally from the UK, I think. I can't remember what he's called now. But again, he does both business and sport. And he uses the same philosophies.
Yes. I think he might be called Matt Dixon.
That's right.
And he has like the fourth pillar, doesn't he? And I think his fourth pillar is the mental side of things.
Yeah. Matt Dixon. That sounds right.
Yeah.
Interesting. There's a lot of stuff out there. And I listen to a lot of podcasts, especially sporty ones, but you get a lot of crossover. And well-being ones as well, you know.
Yes.
So yeah.
Do you listen to them when you're training or
not so much when I'm training. I'm a gardener, so I usually listen to them when I'm working.
Yeah.
I've said it before, but that's how I got the inspiration for doing the Age Group podcast.
Did you? Yes, yeah. It's brilliant.
Because I listened to a lot and I thought, well, there's a lot for professionals. But there wasn't anything for those amateurs that have hit a quite a high level. So, and it's nice to give people the opportunity to share their stories. And I think the hints and tips that they give are just invaluable for people who've actually been there and those who want to achieve what those people have achieved. I think it's invaluable.
And a lot of us, we're working as well, aren't we? So we're squeezing it all around our kids and our work and our families and trying to keep everyone happy, aren't we?
Absolutely. Yeah. So that's how that come about. But yeah, I do love a good podcast.
Yes.
So that's really impressive what you've set up there, Fiona. I think it's such a good, worthy cause. How long have you been doing it now? Did you say 6 years?
We started in 2014 and we became a charity in 2017. Right. So I think, I should have my numbers off the top of my head. I think since then we've raised about nearly £50,000 and supported 22 athletes. We try to support 15 at a time because I can't really manage any more than that. Mm. And so it's just about 15 because that's why if we had more, we wouldn't be as personal as we are. We wouldn't be able to have that contact with everyone and I wouldn't be able to go and watch them at the track or see them training or, remember to support all their races and stuff like that. So 15 is a really nice manageable number.
Good, good. Well, congratulations on setting it up and well done. Where do you see it going? What do you want to achieve with it? Just carry on as it is, or would you like to grow it eventually?
Well, in lockdown, I set up an Instagram account, which was a bit weird because I've never done anything like that before. And the reason I did that was because I did want to grow it in the sense that I absolutely love doing the mindset course with the athletes, but I've also started to do the mindset course with older athletes. And the reason I set the Instagram account up was so that I could sort of gain some followers, runners and cyclists, and I could then sort of promote what I do and sort of talk about what I do. So my Instagram is all about my sharing ideas on sport and nutrition and running and cycling, because those are things that I'm really passionate about. And when I do the course with people who've maybe followed me on Instagram, to be fair, I've only got one person so far, but I've only been doing it since October. So I'm hoping that some other people will say, oh, yeah, I'd love to do that as well. I do it free of charge in the sense that I give my time for free. But I think it's like a three-way win because the individual gets the learning and the strategies and hopefully the better performance. I get to do it and I love doing it. So that's brilliant for me. And then the charity, I ask for the individuals to make a small donation to the charity. So that's how I'm kind of growing it a little bit, growing it through getting sponsorship with corporate clients. So we have a corporate sponsor now, and this year we've been quite successful raising money through grants. But I think because at the moment it's only me and two other trustees, I think it's too much to grow it any bigger. I think it's really nice to have it really small, 15 to 20 athletes, but do a really, really good job and make a real impact on those families, rather than just being, here's a check for £1,000 and don't speak to them ever again. I was just going to say, we try to give each athlete at least £1,000 a year.
Yeah.
And we kind of give it to them depending on when they need it. We don't just give one check. We kind of know, like, we had a cyclist who crashed her bike on the track. And so she needed a new frame. So I was able to take round to her house a check for £500 and she was able to buy a new frame. So we kind of do it like on a as needed basis as well.
Yeah. Do you think going forward there'd be any value in taking that framework, what you've set up and established in your area, and setting it out in different areas around the country? Would that be a way of growing it? Obviously not, you're not running it, but you're giving them the ideas. Yeah.
I mean, I think that would be lovely. And really we are a mini sports aid. So if you look at what sports aid do, they do have help and webinars that they do and about mental health. They do have a nutritionist and they do have help on that side of things. They even have help on athlete branding and sponsorship, and that's another thing that we've done. So the other reason for doing the Instagram was so that I could help the athletes when they leave us at 18. I can say to them, if I can do it, if I can get clients through Instagram, you can get a sponsorship through Instagram. So now I understand how Instagram works, and I put together a little, not as detailed as the 8-week mindset course, but there is we have got a program in athlete branding and sponsorship. So sports aid do it on a national level, but they're not as personal. They're not. It's much more hands off, but. It may be. So if anyone's listening and they want to do a little mini franchise, then...
Yeah, well, that's it, isn't it? You never know.
No, exactly.
But it's such a brilliant idea. And I'm sure every area could use it. Especially the former areas.
Well, exactly. I mean, yes, if you were in the middle of if you're in a big city, you would absolutely find athletes and it would be lovely to support them. And it is so satisfying. It's taken me, I keep saying to my kids, because they're 18 and 16 and they're trying to figure out what they're going to do with their careers and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, it's taken me to the age sort of 50 to figure out what I'm doing with my career.
That's 100%, just never put them under any pressure, because the job's not for life anymore. You always like to chop and change in varieties, the spice of life, isn't it? So
yeah, definitely.
No pressure really. The thing is, I've said to my two boys, finding something that you love doing and it doesn't feel like work is the key.
Yes, 100%. Yeah, I agree with that.
Brilliant, right, great stuff. Right, so we'll move back to you again now then. And we've just got some quick fire questions.
Okay.
So the first one's basically, what is your favourite bit of kit?
Oh, well, probably my Vaporflies.
Your Vaporflies.
I've been trying to do a sub-3-hour marathon in lockdown. And right. I'm pretty sure that they helped me get that goal. Yeah.
What did you do it in?
Well, it's funny. I did two, actually. I did a virtual one, which was kind of weird, thinking you've got to run 26 miles all on your own. But I recruited a couple of friends. So I have a really lovely girlfriend who has done 13 sub-3-hour marathons. So she did the first half with me. And then Henry, who's coaching me now, he did the second half with me. And I had my family there, and I chose a flat course, started at a pub, finished at a pub, and did laps around near where we live, and I did 2:57.
Brilliant, well done.
My shoes, and then at Manchester last year I did 2:58.
Wow.
So I set myself a bit of so this Instagram thing that I've done, my little handle is sub-3-fee, so I set myself a bit of pressure that I needed to actually do it for real. So got a chip timed one, luckily. The first one I did was a qualifying race. So have you heard of the Abbott Masters Majors Marathon Championship?
No.
So this is something that some of your audience might be interested in if they're more keen on the running than the cycling, maybe. So you can qualify for this thing called the Abbott Masters Majors World Marathon Championships. And it's either in any of the Abbott Masters locations for the marathon, which would be Chicago, Berlin, London, New York, can't remember, Boston, I think, is another one. So it's where those six marathon majors are. It's going to be in London this year. And it's like an age group championships.
Okay.
So it's like the age group world marathon championships.
Right.
So that's why I was so keen to do that race, and because of lockdown we could do it as a qualifier virtually. So I'm going to London this year to try and compete in that.
Excellent. Well, good luck with that.
Thank you.
So will you be getting a new pair of trainers for that, or are you wearing the old ones?
Well, I think I'll have to wear the old ones. Have they got about, how many miles have they got in them?
Depends. I reckon 500, but it depends. I'll watch a guy on YouTube called Ed Budd, and he does all he's a runner, and he does all these running shoe reviews and things, and he's been wearing them for ages and ages. So yes, it's like everything, it depends on the style of runner you are, how heavy you are. You know, it's not as easy as it, you've got to change it after. I mean, you listen to Strava, after you've hit 500 kilometers, that's it, you've got to change the shoes.
Yes.
But it's not always like that, so it's not as simple as that, is it?
No. I'll stick with Vaporflies. I did try the carbon, the other ones, the Alphaflies.
Alphaflies, that's what I've got.
Oh, and I couldn't get on with those. So how do you find those?
I love them. I like them even better than the Vaporflies.
Oh, okay, yeah. I like the fact they were bouncy and stuff, but they made my calves hurt a bit.
Right. They are strange to get used to, but yeah, I love them. They give me a lot more cushion. And I find it the other way. I find it when I wear them, because I get a lot of calf pulls, that.
Brilliant. Well, they say, a lot of people say they're helpful for the recovery, don't they?
That's right, yeah.
Oh, good. Well done. I sold mine on eBay, so somebody got Billy Bargain for a pair that had only done 10 miles.
Oh, well, yeah, they have, haven't they? So, next question then. What resources do you use to help you with your duathlons? And that could be YouTube, it could be books, whatever. What's your favourite type of resource?
Oh, load books and podcasts, probably. Yeah.
Any specific ones?
Yeah, I love, we've talked about high performance podcasts. I love that. I love Simon Mundy's podcast. He does one which is called Life Lessons in Sport.
Right, okay.
Love that podcast. I've got a friend called Charlie, and he has a podcast which is called Triathlon. So I know that your listeners will love that, because he's just interviewed some brilliant people, lots of triathletes on there. So those are my go-to podcasts, although I listen to loads of podcasts. I mean, yeah, nutrition, all sorts of ones on nutrition and mental health, well-being, all that sort of stuff. Sure. And then books-wise, I do really like Josephine Perry. She's a sports psychologist, so she's written a couple of books. They're kind of my Bibles for mentoring athletes. One is called Performing Under Pressure.
Right.
Then one is called, in fact, I've got it right next to me. It's this one here.
Oh, yeah.
So that's a great book for coaching teenagers, Teenage Athlete's Guide to Mental Fitness. I love Matt Fitzgerald's books. He's written one called How Bad Do You Want It?
Mm.
That's good. He's written loads. I love his books. Yeah. And I liked reading Endure. Have you read Endure by Alex Hutchinson?
No, I don't think so.
That's really good. That's basically saying, you know how when we want to stop in a race and our brain tells us that we've got to stop because otherwise we're going to keel over and die. It's like, how do we override that central governor, and how do we keep going? Because actually we don't need to stop and keep going for a lot longer, because everybody finishes their race, don't they? We all sprint over the finish line. Yeah. We wouldn't have sprinted it, you know what I mean? We wouldn't have sprinted it in the middle, but somehow we've got a bit more in the tank always, haven't we?
Absolutely, yeah.
So those are good ones. And and food, I love listening, I love cooking, I love nutrition, and the performance chef, he's a cyclist. Good book, yeah, so great recipes.
Yeah, it surprises me though. I listen to, like you, a lot of podcasts, and they have a lot of these top guys on, and the diets are terrible.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. I'm not sure whether it's because they're not capable of cooking, or they just don't like it, but it's just what the liver is, just garbage.
Yeah. Do you think you're not as old as me. I think it's as you get older, you have to be more careful maybe with this whole recovery piece. I mean, I used to, I don't know how you were, but when I, let's say before I got married, I still ran. I would run so that I could drink wine and eat cake, I think. Whereas now, I definitely fuel myself to make myself run better. So I've kind of almost flipped it on its head. And I don't know whether that's just because I'm older and I don't drink as much, but I used to drink so much and now I don't drink as much.
I think as you get older, you change, don't you? And recently, the last couple of years, I've stopped dairy.
Yes, I do too.
Pretty much gone vegetarian, although I do still eat a little bit of fish. Mm-hmm. Like you, don't drink hardly anything now. I think it's just about looking after yourself for that longevity, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And just knowing how rubbish you feel for an entire day if you've been drinking, and that you can't train as hard or as well, or you don't enjoy the training, and it's just so nice to feel alive and happy and well.
I'll tell you what, the massive difference is when we have the boys come back home to stop for the weekend. We have late nights, we have alcohol, and we don't have as much sleep. And it's amazing how bad you feel and how long it takes you to recover to get back to what your normal regime is. And I think sleep for me is the massive, it's the biggest one.
Yes. So have you ever done an afternoon nap?
I do yoga nidra quite a lot.
Okay.
Do you know what yoga nidra is? It basically, you're lying down. It's like a nana nap, basically.
Okay.
And you're just listening to somebody take you on a journey. It's on YouTube. If you search it on YouTube, yoga nidra, and you're listening to a lady's voice or a man's voice, and they're just taking, you're basically going through all the body parts. You might start off in your mouth, and then to your temple, and you go right the way through your body, and then they might get you counting backwards, and at certain points you just nod off.
And how long do you do it for?
You can do it from anywhere from 15 minutes to a couple of hours. I usually take about half an hour. When I've come in from work, I'll just sit down in my favourite chair, put the YouTube video on, run it through a speaker, and I'm gone for half an hour.
Perfect, perfect. And then you feel brilliant afterwards.
Oh, yeah, you feel so much, so much more revived again.
Yes.
So yes to you. Yes is the answer to your question.
Well, it's brilliant. And if you'd asked me this a year ago, I would have gone absolutely no chance. I'm not going to have a snooze in the middle of the day. But if I feel really tired now, I would just go up for 20 minutes, half an hour, and it makes a huge difference.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we're on the same wavelength.
Yeah.
Right, next question is, what advice would you give to anybody wanting to get into multi-sport? And anyone who's already in multi-sport that would like to compete for their country?
Oh, well, I definitely say just try, absolutely 100% just try, just give it a go, just have a bit of fun and try. And just the more you have fun, the more you'll enjoy it and the more you'll do well. And I'd also say don't worry too much about the kit, which is easy for me to say because obviously at Alton Park I was standing around looking at everybody's super swanky TT bikes and their pointy helmets, and I was thinking I haven't got a pointy helmet or a TT bike, so you don't need to have, I think maybe sometimes people think you need to have a time trial bike, and if you've got some tri bars you can, and you've got a good road bike, you can do it on that, no problem at all. And maybe sometimes it helps people make a decision as to which bike they use, because I know it's Zofingen, it's quite a hilly course, and I think even Viborg or Viborg is going to be quite hilly. And so I think some people will be having a bit of a dilemma in their heads, do I use my TT bike or do I use my road bike? And if you've only got a road bike, you don't have that added pressure to make that decision. And if the course is a bit hilly, then it's fine on a road bike.
Absolutely, yeah.
So maybe my advice is don't worry about the kit, just go and do it with what you've got and give it a go, but do get the vapor flies.
Love it. And what about for those who want to qualify?
For those who want to qualify? Well, just try and qualify, because if you don't try, you'll never know, and then you maybe regret. So that's the one piece. So my daughter's quite good on stuff like this. If we say to her, what should we do? She goes, well, Mum, would you regret it if you didn't do it? And so that's the question they need to ask themselves. Would they regret it if they didn't try? And if the answer is yes, then they just should give it a go.
Great. That's a great piece of advice. Nobody's mentioned that before. If you'll regret it, do it. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
And finally, what is your short and long-term goals?
Well, my short-term goals is that Sunday in Yorkshire.
Yes. Good luck.
Going and meeting some more nice people. I always say to, I did my last little Instagram post was about Alton Park, and I always say that I always have two goals when I go to a race. One is to race, and you know, maybe you have to have a little bit of a goal as to where you want to come. But my other goal is always to just meet new people, meet great people. And I haven't ever done any race where I haven't spoken to somebody during the race and made a bit of contact with somebody in a race. And I always think that is my one thing that I love to do. So that's my short-term goal for this weekend. And then, yeah, I mean, I'd like to do a faster marathon time. I would like to do that. That would be awesome. And I've qualified to run at the Bristol 10K with an England vest on. So I'm hoping to do a good time. I'd love to do a PB at the Bristol 10K with my England vest on.
Sure. Brilliant.
And that's September.
Excellent. Right.
So well,
that's a great place to land it, unless you've got anything else that you'd like to add.
No, that's fantastic. Well, I suppose, could I do a little shout out for the charity then, just to say,
of course you can. Yeah.
If anybody's listening and they would like to do the mindset course, I would obviously absolutely love to help them with that. And so they can find us all about us on our website, which is www.cassandfriends.org. And they can contact me through that or through my Instagram, which is at sub3fee. And just a small donation for the charity. And in return, they'd have 8 weeks one-to-one over Zoom mindset coaching for their sport, which I think would really help if people are interested in that. And because I know it certainly makes a huge difference to me personally. And the course has had some great feedback. I've coached a couple of professional triathletes and the girl who's qualified for Kona. I know, you know, I've worked with triathletes before and multi-sport athletes, so.
Excellent. Fantastic. Well, good luck with it. Lots of people want to come on. And I think that's a great place to leave it. And good luck with everything else. And we'll see you on Instagram. See how you've been doing.
Well, honestly, thank you so much for taking my email and messages and asking me to come on. It's been a real pleasure to talk to you and meet you.
Once again, thanks Fiona for coming on and sharing your story with everybody. And that charity you've set up, that's a fantastic cause. And I hope it just gets stronger and stronger. And if there's anybody out there listening that would like to get in touch with Fiona and help their charity in any way, and don't forget the charity is called Cass and Friends. You can find them on Instagram under that name, and you can also find them on the website of cassandfriends.org. Yeah, get in touch with Fiona, and Fiona's on Instagram, sub3fee. Get in touch, and hopefully you can help them out in some small way, or even better, in some big way. And also, if you're interested as an age grouper, as an athlete, take a look on there and have a look at the mindset course that Fiona's offering. Sounds like a really worthwhile course and something that we could probably all do with doing, just for a little donation, like she says. So yeah, really enjoyed that chat and finding out about the worthwhile work that Fiona's doing. And hopefully, after speaking to Jamie from Preska Sportswear, we can do some sort of tie-in with them. And I'm looking forward to working with Preska. And if you're interested, go and have a look on their website, which is preskasportswear.com, and see what it's all about from a sustainability point of view. I believe that they're only sustainable sports brand in the world. So really nice quality stuff. And that's about it for this episode. Hope you've enjoyed it. I certainly have. And thank you once again for taking the time out to listen, whatever you're doing, training wise. I hope it goes well, and we shall hopefully entertain you in a couple of weeks' time with another episode. And if you've liked what you've heard, please go along to Apple Podcast and leave a review and a rating. It really does help. And also you can do that on Spotify now, I believe. And if you want to get in touch with us, you can drop us an email at the agegroupmultisportpodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Instagram at amp_1967. You can find us on Facebook at AmpGB. We have our own website where you can find all the previous podcasts, and that is agegroupmultisportpodcast.buzzsprout.com. We're also on Twitter at Age Group Multisport Podcast, and we have our own YouTube channel, which is AmpGB. And again, all the podcasts are on YouTube if that's your favoured platform. So there's plenty to go at. But once again, thanks for taking the time out to listen, and we'll see you next. But don't forget, stay safe, keep training, and love the process.